I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The acclaimed author Amitava Kumar joins me now. He is the author of a new book, Immigrant Montana. It's a novel that tells the story of Kailash, a young man from India who makes his way to America to study. We follow his life in university as he contends with fitting in America, as he navigates relationships with women and his relationship with mentors. I asked Mr. Kumar, too, about being a mentor to his students, as well as the similarities between him and the character in this book, what he can say in fiction versus in a memoir, as well as how he views America today. We spoke a couple of weeks ago, just after he spent a few days in Vancouver as a guest of the Writers' Fest. We talk about his time here and the various travels he's had for this book. Amitava Kumar is a professor of English at Vassar College. He is a writer and journalist and an author of several books of nonfiction, as well as a previous novel. In 2016, he received a Guggenheim Fellowship as well as a Ford Fellowship. Immigrant Montana is published by Hamish Hamilton. He joined me from Poughkeepsie, New York. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Amitava Kumar. Mr. Kumar, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Pleasure.
So you're probably asked a lot about how much the character in the book, Kailash, is you. Do you find that tiresome?
Not at all. Largely because I'm very much aware that I spent a lot of, I give a lot of thought to, or I devised various strategies for making Kailash appear like me, you know? I was careful to include overlapping histories. Not only that, I was personally rather proud that his name was pronounced by one of his friends as Kalashnikov, and then AK-47, and then AK, which of course is also my initials. So I guess I have tried hard to promote the perception that it is also me. So
I guess another question that people might ask you is if you're writing, say, partially about yourself, why not say just write about yourself in a memoir or something like that? But there's something in fiction that one can do that's probably just as revelatory as, say, a memoir, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would even say that it is possible in fiction to liberate yourself from some of the constraints that might apply in fiction and therefore be able to approach a reality that you believe is there or is true in a deeper way. And it's not just about the self. It can be about someone else. For example, one of the central characters in my novel is based on a man who was a prominent radical thinker in this country, an immigrant from a place close to mine. His name was Iqbal Ahmed. Now, I did some interviews with his former wife, with his children, with his students. I even went to his village, but I did not think I had enough to create I did not think I had enough to write his biography. So instead, in his particular case, I felt it was easier to create a persona that was fictionalized and draw upon things that I had found in my interviews, but also approach other things that I thought, you know, my imagination could invent that I thought got to the heart of the matter.
Yeah, and the place where the book is set, where I guess it sort of begins, is the 90s when Kailash comes to America.
That's right.
So growing up in India, what sort of view did he have of the wider world?
Yeah.
Like, what did he think was beyond? I mean, it's a real. Culture shock is not the right word, but I mean, when one gets to New York, whatever time period it is, especially in the 1990s, coming where he comes from, I mean, it must be, it's stunning almost, isn't it?
It is. And there is a section where he is writing letters home in Hindi, which is his language, to his grandmother in a village in Eastern India. Now, this Eastern India is his village. Kailash's village is very close to the village or to the town where George Orwell was born in India, where his father, Orwell's father, was an opium sub-agent for the British who ruled over India at that time. It's a poor place. Mm-hmm. Now, when Kailash comes here to study in New York in the 90s, in the letters that he's writing home to his grandmother, he's saying things like, even the person who comes to collect garbage comes in a truck or drives their own vehicle, something like that. Or he says something about, because he imagines his grandmother is illiterate, he imagines a child, perhaps his cousin, or someone who is a school-going child reading his letter out to his grandmother, and he wants to let that child be touched by a sense of wonder. I imagine he's trying to project his own self, his own younger self, into that space. He thinks, what would I have been surprised by? Well, he's surprised by the fact that here, you know, when people travel on trains, they actually have to buy tickets.
Yeah.
Little things.
Yeah.
In the same way as I was, you know, Joseph, when I came to this country, I bought yogurt. And I was surprised as hell to discover that it had fruit at its bottom. And it was a very small surprise. But, you know, it was like, wow, you can have blueberries, you can have strawberries.
Yeah.
It was an amazing thing for me.
So what reviewers have said about your book, and because they say it's marvelous in how many literary and cultural references there are, and for some people, I guess the 1990s can now be nostalgic.
yes.
What is it fun to look back, say at that time for you, as in terms of when you're writing a book like this? I mean, when you're going back into the past. Not just your own past, but say the past of the wider world, the zeitgeist, if you will, of then. Is that fun?
It is. In fact, it is even a relief. I mean, I'll tell you why. When I was a graduate student, and the first Persian Gulf War was being fought, I thought that the Americans were making a mistake. But, you know, all those mistakes seem so petty compared to the world in which we are living now.
Mm.
I mean, Trump makes George Bush look like a friendly primary school teacher. You know, other than that, of course, what had seemed like new or culturally startling to me, for example, putting on the radio and hearing Dr. Ruth offering advice about sex.
Mm.
That, to me, had appeared utterly startling. And it's fun to go back to my younger self and, with a light veneer of fiction, imagine a character listening to her for the first time and then thinking about the country, you know? It is also a little bit about the discovery of India from a distance.
Mm.
You know? That is the country I'd been born in. That's where I'd grown up. But coming here and then watching something like, I don't know, Jewel in the Crown on Masterpiece Theater on black and white TV,
yeah.
It was like, how do you discover yourself from a distance? That is another of the things that it was fun to return to.
Now, if Kailash had stayed in India, what would have become of him? And you brought up Dr. Ruth and sex. This I find interesting because when he comes to America, he has a number of relationships, and it opens his mind in terms of the sexual experience. His relationship with women, I mean, it would have been different if he had stayed there, right?
Yeah, especially in the time that we are talking about. He wouldn't have had, I imagine, he wouldn't have acquired sexual knowledge in quite this way. I imagine he would have drifted for a while in his life, and he would have found a profession, perhaps a low-paying journalist job, and he would have gone in for an arranged marriage sooner or later. You know, that's what would have happened to him.
And the there's something so profound in reading what other people have said of the book, and that's the idea of Kailash speaking English but not quite American. My parents are Filipino. I was born in Canada.
Oh, okay.
And so it So I do feel, I mean, if one had to ask me what I am, I'd probably say, I would say Canadian, but I don't look Canadian to some people. And this is what's profound in your book is the sense of belonging. I mean, what one feels, I mean, really at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's how other people, I guess, sort of view you and whether you fit their conception. And so that's something he has to contend with, doesn't he?
That's right. That's right. And that's in some ways, I guess, based on my own feeling, you know, even after a period of long habitation in this country, I've been living here since I came as a young man to study English literature at a university. That feeling has never left me that, you know, which I don't know how widely it is shared. I imagine it is shared widely among immigrants. It is certainly true to me, in my experience, that I cannot step in a room without that momentary thought always accompanying it, which is that the other person sitting in the room, encountering my entry, is perhaps asking, who is he? What is he doing here? You know, that feeling, not only about a room, but then broadly generalized about the country as such, you know. Which is not to say that I don't also feel that I belong sometimes, or I don't, but it is just that feeling has never left me.
And so what does home feel like for you? I mean, you mentioned that America's been your home for a number of years. I mean, when you look back at India now, or you look toward India now, or you travel there, I'm sure you do, does that feel at home still in any way?
In some ways, but again, not home, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I go there for literary festivals. My father and my sister live in my hometown. I think the idea of home for a writer finally has to be in language, in a language of his or her own making. You know, the house of literature, frankly, you know, that is your home, where you then also begin to construct what your family is. And in my family, I have all sorts of people. Philip Roth, Alice Munro, you know, and the younger set. I have cousins who have names like Maggie Nelson or, you know, Jenny Offel. And there's a rather severe-looking uncle called J.M. Kudzia, et cetera, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it is almost... I feel a degree of estrangement from India, and I often do journalism there in order to learn more about the place that I have left and I'm getting more distant from every day. And it is the same here, you know?
Yeah.
To be able to take a camera sometimes or a press stand with a press card around your neck to go out, let's say, you know, when I was a young man, when I was a grad student, you know, to cover NAFTA strikes or to go to a neo-Nazi march was to find some sort of a valid cover to go and discover one's identity in a new land that was also being discovered at the same time by you. Mm. You were your own Christopher Columbus, you know.
Mm. The relationship that he has with America, I mean, is very much a relationship that one might have, like a character might have with another character, if you will. And
I was going to say, and not least because this relationship is often also with other characters, chiefly women, through whom he hopes to find out more about America.
Right.
I think he's the sort of a character who's trying to discover the new world to the new women, primarily to the new women he is meeting.
Yeah.
The women and his professors, those are his influences.
Yeah. Now, I'm wondering if you had written a book or lived a life, say, in another country, whether it be Canada or England or Paraguay, for that matter.
Sure.
I mean, it would have been a different book altogether because America is such a big country. You know, contrary to Donald Trump, I think it is a great country.
Sure.
That it's probably, I don't know if complicated is the right word, but, or romantic, but I mean, it would have been a different book altogether, don't you think? Because everybody's relationship with it, with whatever country they're living in or from, I mean, that's going to be fraught anyway, right?
Yeah.
But America itself is fascinating.
And America is so much younger than many other countries, too. You know, suppose Kailash had gone to England. His discovery of those things, of his identity or of his knowledge, would also be in many ways complicated by England's 200-year-old relationship with India, the history of colonialism.
Mm.
There was no such presence of America in India. In that same way, to take up your example about Paraguay, maybe there would be a little bit about soccer or about certain bit of food or about the complication of a native identity. But there isn't much overlap. There isn't also, the discovery would be of a smaller scale. But you come to America, you're at once discovering a vast land and you're discovering a mythical place. Mm-hmm. That has a place in the modern imagination. A mythical, magical place of cinema, for example.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I want to include the idea of, because of what happened in the 60s, the way revolutions were formed here, the revolutions in culture, in style, in living, also about sexuality then, you know?
Yeah.
That's all a part of it.
Now you're a professor and you mentioned a moment ago that Kailash's influence comes not only from women but from academics in his life. The nature of mentorship I think is fascinating as well. And so in your work now, in your career, I'm sure you're considered a mentor by many.
I am very proud to be considered a mentor by many. Actually, I teach writing here also at Vassar College, and so it has been a great pleasure and honor for me to produce writers, you know, to help shape writers who then go out into the world and have published books. So that has been wonderful. But even when they are not writers, to feel a sense of belonging, if that's the word, because of what we were talking earlier, to feel a sense of belonging precisely by teaching students, watching them change, and finding it powerfully, emotionally moving to see them graduate and go away into their lives, you know. So yes, and I think what you see in the character Ehsan Ali, who is a professor, a very cosmopolitan presence in the book, very different from career-minded professors.
Uh-huh.
Instead, someone who's inspired by ideals. And what you see there is my own desire to shape what I would like to be at some point. To be a person like that in young people's lives, who might have messy lives. They're young, they're experimenting with things, they're innocent, they're confused sometimes. In their lives, how to be a sort of a moral center. I'd love to be, I hope I am that already, but, you know, that is certainly an ideal that I'm trying to sketch out there.
So the book very much is you looking back, as well as, say, I don't know, aspirational is the right word, but looking ahead as well, right?
Exactly. And not just for the main character, but also for the world. What does it mean for the world to escape the grasp of narrow nationalism and to think instead of a sense of belonging to the world, you know, being a part of community, which graduate school often is, Joseph, which is that people have come from different countries, they sit in the same room for some time, they often find meaning in each other's lives, they forge relationships, and then they return to the world enriched to do things. That's amazing. That's amazing to imagine. You know, the institution, the university as a place for inventing the world.
Yeah. The other thing that I've noticed in reading reviews for the book is a lot of people are talking about just how timely the book is. And you know, a book like this probably takes a long time. And I don't know if one can imagine once it's released just how it'll be received or and such. But
no, one can't. One can't.
No, yeah. But when it does come out, and as it has, and it has affected so many readers in terms of looking at today and where we are,
yeah.
not just in your country, but in mine and the wider world, as you've just said, that must be gratifying.
Yeah, and I wonder how does it happen that a book finds an echo in things that are happening? You know, Trump has gotten elected. People are thinking about immigration. People are thinking about migrants. People are thinking about the Me Too movement. People are thinking about rethinking sexuality. People are thinking about rethinking the idea of belonging and who is an insider and an outsider. All of these things. And I find it fulfilling that one is part of that conversation. I mean, I found that, you know, recently, as you know, I was, you know, in Calgary, then Vancouver, mm-hmm. Toronto. That is what readers respond to, how a work of literary imagination nevertheless is in conversation with the day-to-day happenings in the world.
Yeah. And so, I mean, because you are from America, do you find that you're forced to I guess, confront that with other people? I mean, people must be asking you who are fascinated with America, interested, horrified at the same time of where America is, to explain it to them or worse, to say force you to be subjected to their view of where they think America is?
Yes. I mean, you were accurate in saying that the book takes a long time to write. But, you know, I was at the Edinburgh Literary Festival, and one person asked me if I had written this book in response to Trump's rise. Mm. But, of course, that's not true. By the time Trump came to power, my book had already been written. So the real thing I'm feeling at the moment, actually, is that instead of thinking of the book that I have already written and that is now out as a response to Trump, I am indeed on a daily basis confronted by the question that in this age of fake news, how do we write fiction, you know?
Mm.
And that's what I've been thinking about for the past several months. And let's hope something comes out of it.
Yeah. Do you enjoy, you were in Vancouver recently, do you enjoy, yeah. I mean, traveling can be, a pain in the ass for a lot of people, but when you get to where you need to go and you get to talk about your book as you have, that's got to be rewarding, isn't it?
Yes, and I have to say, you know, the Literature Festival at the Writers' Fest at in Vancouver was extraordinary. There were some wonderful writers whose company I enjoyed. The people were wonderful. And even the venue, you know, being on Granville Island.
Yeah.
Right now I'm holding in my hand a pencil that I bought in a store called Opus outside my hotel there.
Oh, yeah.
And just because I bought drawing materials there, I have taken up in the last few days, I'm doing a drawing each day because I believe that if you're watching and observing what you're drawing, you also become a better writer. Mm. Or at least that's my belief.
Yeah.
And so there were these other benefits of being in Vancouver. Not to mention, my friend, the excellent Peking duck I ate there when someone took me, a friend of mine, took me to a restaurant out in a suburb somewhere. I think the place was called Kirin or Kirik.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was great. So there's much that I have to celebrate in Vancouver, yes.
I've got feelings of nostalgia for my time in Poughkeepsie. When I went there a couple of years ago, and but I guess, you know, that's the funny thing. Wherever you go, you can find, you know, a place of comfort, a place of home.
Yeah, and you can find greater comfort than in telling a story about it.
Mm.
You know, so because And that is, I'm trying to respond here in that way to the question that you asked about where is home? Because, you know, what we are trying to say then is that it is, we experience something, and then the moment we tell a story about it, we are constructing a little house for our feeling, and therefore perhaps a little house also for ourselves. I'm talking of speaking duck.
Yeah.
Even the night I ate the duck, I wrote to my friend, there's a little paragraph long story that Lydia Davis says has about, well, the happiest moment. If you don't mind, I'm going to read it for you.
Oh, please, please do.
It's called The Happiest Moment. It's by Lydia Davis. If you ask her, what is a favorite story she has written? She will hesitate for a long time and then say, it may be this story that she read in a book once. An English language teacher in China asked his Chinese student to say what was the happiest moment in his life. The student hesitated for a long time. At last, he smiled with embarrassment and said that his wife had once gone to Beijing and eaten duck there. And she often told him about it. And he would have to say the happiest moment of his life was her trip and the eating of the duck.
Mm.
Isn't that extraordinary?
It is, isn't it?
Story.
Oh, man.
A little. Yeah. So, there you go.
Yeah. This has been such fun to talk to you. And
it has been great to talk to you, too. Thank you.
Yeah, and I wish you best of luck with the book. I mean, the book's already doing well, so you don't need my luck. But I wish you well.
I appreciate it.
I wish you well, nonetheless. Thank you very much for this, Amitava.
All right, Joseph. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The book is called Immigrant Montana. It's published by Hamish Hamilton. Amitava Kumar joined me on the line from Poughkeepsie, New York. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunder.